K-Boo. Born from challenge with a vision for future solutions, we are PDX Progressive Talk Radio, and we're talking to the leaders of government, nonprofits, and businesses seeking answers and having some success. Listen to us live at 7 p.m. on the fourth Wednesday of each and every month as we seek to grow, learn, and progress. We are PDX Progressive Talk Radio.
And good evening, and welcome to PDX Progressive Talk Radio. My name is Moses Ross. I am your humble host for this evening, this one-hour show. If you're listening right now, you're listening live, and it is April 26th already. That's just amazing. We're in that period where, you know, summer's about to start. We're about to have a May election. And, you know, the flowers are out there, and it's just going to be, I'm really optimistic about the future. And, you know, and it kind of leads to the topic that I want to talk about tonight. And that is where I'm finding a lot of optimism about our future is in the when I look at these school board races that are being contested right now all throughout Oregon. Now, you might have heard about some of the challenges that school board races are having right now as far as the type of candidates that they're attracting. And you may be correct. There are certainly, you know, even in here in the metro area, there are races that have, you know, certainly extremists running, folks running for, you know, because they've been encouraged by organizations and groups and philosophies to run versus, you know, staying focused on the kids, God forbid. So the show tonight, I want to kind of highlight what it takes to be a candidate and the motivations behind being a candidate for school board in this environment right now. So I'm very fortunate to have a couple of different guests on the show tonight. I have three folks in wildly different races, but yet similar motivations and similar outcomes, I'd like to think. Our first guest, and I'll introduce him here officially here in just a second, is running here in the Portland metropolitan area for the Multnomah Educational Service District. The second guest that I'll have is a school board candidate for the Molalla School District. And they have their unique challenges. And then finally, a gentleman who's a candidate in the Beaverton School District. And I'll leave it to my listeners here to bring the threads together and to see the commonalities, but also the challenges, but yet also, though, the opportunities. And that will come out in the type of, as you hear and you get to learn about these candidates and their motivations. I think you'll feel good about it. So, anywho, enough of me. Let's get into the show. My guest in studio tonight is Danny Gage. Danny is a candidate for the Multnomah Educational Service District at-large position in the upcoming May election. Thank you for coming.
Hi, and thank you for having me.
Danny, I met you couple months back, and to see you here, it just pleases me to no end, because the fact that you jumped into the race and are making it a good race. Now, tell me something. I have to start on this with everyone. What motivated you to become a candidate and run for the Multnomah Educational Service District?
Yeah, that's an excellent question. For me, that's two parts. That is, there were people who motivated me, and there were also people who kind of pushed me into this race. You know, I was really inspired by the teenager Shiva Rajandari, who ran in Boise, Idaho, against a very, far-right person. It's Boise, Idaho, not exactly known for being a progressive state. And won and beat an incumbent, which is a very hard thing to do, especially not having the backing of a political establishment. And, you know, seeing it done in Boise, Idaho, it really just renders, if they can do it in Boise, we can do it here in Portland, right? And, you know, and I just got, you know, encouragement from school board members and community leaders that these seats were open, and they thought that I would be the perfect person for, you know, political office. And I threw my hat in the ring.
Wow. That is fantastic. I intentionally did not start out by pointing out the obvious when you're sitting in front of Danny Gage. He is a 18-year-old man about ready to graduate from Grant High School. And that is obviously an outlier as far as the type of a candidate that we have running for these types of offices. Is that a positive or a negative for you, sir?
I think it's a double-sided sword. For me, though, it is extremely positive because it brings opportunity. Mm. I absolutely love the fact that people have constantly pointed to my age because I am, you know, they keep bringing up a student, but I reflect our constituency. I reflect students. And that's entirely something new, and that's entirely something that is so needed in public education and, quite frankly, just younger voices in terms of governance in the state and, quite frankly, around this country. Is a new representation, a new style of governance is needed.
You know, it's interesting how you're almost instinctually tapping into this new awareness of your generation to be active politically, to vote. You were sharing with me some examples of what had happened during the pandemic and how you kind of took that path towards politics, running for office. Share with us how that worked for you and how turning your age into an asset here, you know?
Yeah. So, you know, just starting, I mean, we all experienced being in the pandemic and being at home. It drove some of us a little wild, but it gave an opportunity to look around at what was currently happening. You know, the thing about the pandemic is that it didn't necessarily turn so much of our systems bad. What it did is it exposed what wasn't working, right? The pandemic didn't make the healthcare system, you know, exhausted. The healthcare system had already been exhausted. It just exacerbated it. It didn't turn, you know, education in, you know, all the things that have happened to it. It just exacerbated. And I think that was one of the most interesting things is recognizing that, and, you know, being at home and being like, oh shoot, you know, healthcare is in crisis, education is in crisis, you know, policing and our response to racial injustice, and now I have the time on my hands to do something about it, right? And if I have the time on my hands to do something about it, why shouldn't I?
Well said. You know, public service is such a continuing theme for these types of races, especially because they're unpaid positions 9.5 times out of 10. Am I correct? The MASD?
Yes.
Your position would be a volunteer. And, you know, and it's interesting, what that does is it does attract a type of a candidate that usually does have a lot more time, and that usually is an older demographic. MESD is a wonderful example of, I imagine, you know, once you're a board member, the average age may reduce down to 6 to 50. I'm joking, but you certainly will be the youngest member they've ever had.
Yes.
What do you want to get accomplished there? Tell us about tell us about Multnomah Educational Service District. What's the duties of a board member? What are you going
to
be doing?
Yeah, so I think it's really important to, you know, step back a little bit and really understand, like, what is an ESD in Oregon. So an ESD stands for an Education Service District, and they, you know, look different throughout the state, for sure, but they really provide education services to the component schools within, and those typically look like outdoor service learning. So if any of your kiddos, actually last week was outdoor school for so many of our families across the Multnomah area. So many of those relate right now listening. But that, you know, special education, they, you know, comprise of, you know, houseless transportation services. They did a lot of the work with testing within schools for COVID during, quote unquote, the pandemic. You know, a little iffy if we're still in a pandemic or not always. But, you know, they provide school nurses as well. So they really provide those kind of like component essential services inside our school. And, you know, MESD just stands for the Multnomah Education Service District. And so the school districts within the Multnomah County boundaries, that's the, you know, the services that they provide.
I see. So not only would it be the Portland Public School District, it would be the Reynolds District,
yes.
The David Douglas
yes.
District. Interesting. So now yours is an at-large position and the others are by zone. Is that correct?
Yes.
Does that make a difference at all in any way as far as how your representation? You're elected citywide, is that correct?
Countywide.
Countywide,
pardon me. So the Multnomah Education Zone encompasses all of Multnomah County as well as encompasses part of North Clackamas as well. A little bit of North Clackamas is within the zone as well.
Now, what is your vision for after you're on the board, you're able to make a difference? What would you like to see happen?
Yeah, you know, just going back to that question you asked me a little bit, like what the heck is an ESD? I am a firm believer in for our government to work, we have to know what it does. So really beginning the conversation about what our services provide, you know, there are, you know, even school board members that serve our component education districts that don't even know exactly how MESD functions. And so that's, you know, in my opinion, is something that we really have to get working at, is, you know, building a bigger name and recognition within the county, as well as really working with our, you know, our municipalities. That includes, you know, the county itself, the cities, our component districts, to really get a clear understanding of what we do and why our work is so vital. So that is, to me, is really important, because to really get a functioning democracy, people have to know how it works.
Well, and you made the point very well that not too many people know what ESD is and the roles and the services that it provides. So it's one of those kind of unknown or under the radar type of positions that still have such a great impact and, quite frankly, a large budget, if I understand it correctly. So once again, what do you see happening in your position after 4 years? What would you like to see? What would you leave? What would be, let me ask you this, what would be your legacy after you are finished at the MESD? And we'll wrap up with that.
That is such an interesting question. For me, a legacy is really a quality education for our districts and the district itself. We have so many issues. I mean, you're well aware. We have so many issues. Oregon doesn't even rank very high in how we're doing education-wise within the country. But really pushing to the max quality services that we're providing. For our component districts to work, the education services have to work. I think a lot of people like to think of schools as just, the teacher and the kid, but it's all around. It's wraparound services. It's, you know, the people who set the budgets. It's what happens at the state level and how those budgets get set. So it's a whole, I like to think of education as a whole tree, and you have all these different branches and it's, you know, sprouting out in different ways. And, but really creating a quality education for all of our students has to be just the main thing that comes to mind, is what we can leave, right?
I think, you know, from your mouth to God's ears, I'd like to think, you know, as far as the overall intention of what would happen here, you know, it's solid. I think it's so easy too, you know, to keep in mind that I think I said this already, you know, all of these folks are in volunteer positions, and so, you know, they're doing this for the right. What I do love about why you're running, Danny, is because you're doing it for the right reasons. So I appreciate where you're coming from on that. What is up next for you from here?
Well, I'm going to be a school board member, so that's what's up next.
Yeah, if I didn't mention it before, you're running unopposed.
Yes.
Fantastic. So have you, in the 1 minute or couple minutes that I have left with you, what have you learned from the process so far that you feel like you might be able to even apply it while you're at that job?
Yeah, you know, I've learned so much campaigning. There's so much that they don't tell you about running a campaign, because you're the candidate, but you're also the person who manages, you know, your money. You're the person who has to do the social media and the outreach and the outwork, and, you know, setting up for things like this interview and thinking about how you're going to respond. So that is definitely a lot to take away, is that running for office is a whole process, to say the least. What I have learned is that, you know, there are a lot of barriers to achieving public office that I think really need to be talked about, especially if you're, you know, coming from a place as, you know, a person of color or, you know, a woman. There are a lot of barriers that keep a lot of people, in my personal opinion, from doing this type of service work, that, you know, their voices and the thoughts and their opinions and, you know, their lived experiences that are invaluable, that they just in so many ways can't bring to public service.
Right. Well, I think that will, you know, that's going to be certainly part of your legacy, I'd like to think, is the fact that, you know, for the first time ever, the budgets and the priorities of the ESD will be looked through not just a diversity lens, but through an age lens, user lens, someone who's recently familiar with the process, you know? So I think that's fantastic. Danny, all the best to you. Thank you. Thank you very much. Hey, if people want to learn a little bit more about you, where do they go?
Yeah, so if you want to sign up to volunteer, donate, you can sign up. You can learn more at danny4oregon.com.
Very good. Very good. Danny, all the best to you, sir.
Thank you for having me.
You have been listening to an interview with Danny Gage, candidate and soon-to-be board member of the Multnomah Educational Service District. If my listeners have not done it already, please make sure to vote. Coming up, you probably got the voter's pamphlet in the mail already. And if that is the case, you can go there and you can see Danny and learn more about him and the others. Now, we've got on the... Am I hearing from my... do we have our guest on the line? Okay. Actually, okay, good. What we'll do here next is, talk about the wonderful thing about doing a live show is that you got to go with the flow. We are going with the flow. We had planned for our recorded interview with the Beaverton School District candidate to be the last one. We're going to go ahead and do that next, and then we'll come back around with our candidate from the Molalla School District. So up next is a interview that I did here with the Beaverton School Board candidate, Justice Raji. And Justice is a father of two boys, and you'll hear some continuing themes, similar themes. And I'd like to point that out to everybody, and you'll hear it in the third segment as well. Okay, very good. I'm going to have my production team.
Well, this is Moses Ross, and in continuing with the theme that we've had this evening of interviewing candidates that are running for a variety of school board positions around the metro area, I want to extend a warm welcome to a candidate that is out in the Beaverton School District by the name of Justice Raji. Justice, thank you for taking some time to talk to me tonight.
Indeed. Thank you for having me, Moses. I appreciate it.
Tell me, you know, every candidate has a story. Please introduce yourself to my audience and tell me what, and tell them also, what motivated you to run for Beaverton School Board?
Well, so name's Justice Raji, pronouns he, him. I would say what motivated me is a confluence, you know, a couple things coming together. But the first one being that, you know, I've spent most of my professional life working in human services and in education in one way or another. Sometimes, you know, going all the way back to doing peer education as a very young man in my 20s, to tutoring, to actually earning a master's in teaching, with the anticipation of being a classroom teacher, and the world of 2008 and the economy and other decisions, led me back into, working in a school, you know, as a parent coordinator, with SEI, and then, eventually back to kind of staying in the world of case management, working with youth and families involved with the criminal justice system at POYC. And the common theme in all those experiences that education was always, you know, relevant to the work that I was doing, and especially doing case management and support services with families. You know, schools are a vital partner in what happens a lot of times, you know, with young people, where sometimes they get access to services for the first time, or, you know, where families find, you know, additional community supports and folks who would operate, who have a vested interest also in their children besides the parents, you know. So that in my background, being the grandchild of a teacher and the grandchild of a psychiatric social worker, and also other working folks, you know, I'm a strong believer in public education. It's where all the kids can be served. And so with myself being in a place in my life where I have the capacity to go after this and to serve, I thought it was the right time for me to put myself out there, you know, to run for public office in this way. And, you know, I have two kids that have graduated. Well, one's graduated from the district, one's currently in the district. So I'm also a parent. And it's, you know, I think it's important to me for folks to understand that oversight and running and serving as a school board member is a job. Right. It's a, you know, depending on how many hours you put into it, it could be up to at times 20 to 30 hours a week of work, trying to make sure that the numbers make sense, that the questions that need to get answered are answered, that the research that needs to get done is done. And, you know, as much as we are, you know, we need voters to vote us into those roles, you're coming to that role because you want to do some work and offer for at least 4 years of your time to do something that the community needs. And I felt that this was the right time for me to do that in my life.
Well, you know, I really appreciate that, the focus. I'm hearing a theme of public service throughout your career, and it must be very important to you. Why is it important to be a public service, especially when it comes to school boards?
Well, you know, we live in a representative democracy, which, in order for it to be most responsive, I think, to the needs of the broad swath of people, but especially folks who have experienced, you know, have had a marginalized experience or an oppressive experience. Sometimes you have to be the person in the chair that's answering the questions, that's doing the legwork. And we can't, you know, the world won't change without our contribution. You know, now I know that there could be limits to how much one person can do, but if collectively, you know, having a spirit of service, I think usually tends to serve, you know, most folks well. And I've benefited from public schools also. I mean, that's predominantly how I got my education, whether, you know, at every level. And I think it's important to take a turn giving some of that back.
No, I can certainly appreciate that. And, you know, and that's been kind of a continuing theme I'm hearing, is these are volunteer positions. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the fact that you're giving up your time is amazing. It can be a sacrifice, but it's worth it in regards to what the outcome can be. And let's talk about that outcome for a moment. What is your vision? What would you like to accomplish in your 4 years there? What do you think? Let's talk about maybe an issue or two that is near and dear to you that you want to work on.
I think I have a couple things. You know, just, and this first one will be a bit kind of wonky, but, you know, as a district that is, you know, one of the most diverse in the state, if not the most diverse district in the state, having just the opportunity to see that diversity, you know, serving on the board, I think speaks to the future of the district. You know, and that might be a little bit on a personal note. But we also, as a lot of districts are facing, you know, declining enrollment, some due to lingering issues with the pandemic, but also just because we have less young people than we've had in the past. And so many districts are going to be facing, how do we keep our service level? How do we provide the things that we're currently doing when the way that we're funded is based on how many kids are that are enrolled? You know, that may not be something that I'll be able to change. It definitely was something that would be more than just justice. We would need probably the cooperative work of lots of folks around the state to change the funding model. But internally, we can work together as a board to figure out how do we do the things that work best for our students and our kids, you know, by working together. So that's one of my second issue. And my third issue is, you know, I'm definitely concerned about, you know, our district still has a disparity in data in terms of discipline. And that has not changed over the, you know, the last, you know, time that has been reported in terms of youth of color, and especially African-American students, you know, face a higher rate of expulsion and suspension. And, you know, we need to update our data practices, meaning what we measure and record and use to hold ourselves accountable and how we talk about that with the community. But more importantly, we need to update our discipline practices to make sure we're doing, one, what's most effective to, you know, have order and structure and healthy environment, learning environment. But also remember, we still have an obligation to take care of those kids and their education, even if they're having challenges. Because, again, private schools, they can choose to stop serving, but public schools cannot. They need to keep the doors open, and those children are our responsibility, whatever happens to them or whatever, you know, things occur within the building. So we need to be creative, and we need to be compassionate, and we need to do better.
You know, and every school district is unique and has its unique challenges and its unique makeup. What is the current demographic makeup of the Beaverton School District? It's gone through a lot of growth, hasn't it?
Yes. The district size-wise, overall size is shrinking a little bit year by year, but the actual diversity within the district, again, I said, like 57% of the students in the district currently are students of color. The largest population, that being our Latino community members. 14% of our students, you know, speak English as a second language. We have a large immigrant communities, from Pacific Asia Pacific Islander students to East African and Somali students. We also then have, within that, we have diversity around the economics in our district. You know, 38% of the Beaverton School Board is, for school district, is currently on free or reduced lunch. You know, the west side of our region and Beaverton is usually framed within a certain level of affluence. But, you know, close to 50% of our school, you know, students, you know, are definitely coming from working families or families that might be experiencing poverty. And, you know, not to mention, you know, our houseless students and families experiencing houselessness that are part of that conversation. So we have a lot of different angles of diversity, including, you know, students with neurodivergent needs and support, right, that we need to also think about and consider when we're talking about what does our district look like. And so with all those pieces, some of the things that have maybe we could in the past would have been written off as not important to how the districts run or not the populations who you need to be responsive to, have changed, you know. And, you know, our whole region is growing in population despite this downturn in the number of kids, you know, which is a much more complicated housing and social dynamics issue. But I think in the short term, we need to be prepared, you know, to make sure that we're doing the best we can for our kids that we have. But, you know, there may be a time in the future where that trend goes the other direction in terms of population. and make sure we've put things in place to be what our community looks like, you know, in 10 years, you know, and even years after that, and not just, you know, what it looks as has looked like in the past.
You know, one of our other school board candidates that I spoke to earlier was, has the race has been affected by far-right extremists. Mm-hmm. She's a, and with other agendas, trying to get their folks that feel they're strongly with them on their school boards. Anywho, the are you finding that? Is there any, is there resistance to efforts to recognize and embrace the diversity of the district and serve that diversity?
I mean, and I'll put on my just parent who's advocated, you know, gone to give testimony at the school board and pushed for some of the equity work that the district is doing, just as a community member. I mean, I think like a lot of things in our country, there's always resistance to change, especially change that when we're operating from maybe a zero-sum vision of the world. So far, my own efforts, I've not, you know, I've tried not to really center those voices. My perspective is that we have the capacity to, one, continue the work that the current board and recent boards have done to try to move the district to a place where we're much more focused on equitable outcomes, you know, centering those with the, you know, facing the hard most challenges, but understanding we need to deliver a great school for everybody. And I think we're going to keep being able to do that. We just have to not be deterred from the idea that, like, equity is a side project. Equity is the, you know, fair, balanced, good working schools is, that's the product. That's what we're supposed to be doing, and whatever that takes. And if that means updating old policy, you know, making corrections, you know, changing things that, you know, maybe fit, you know, 10 years ago, 20 years ago, 30 years ago, and saying, well, we're, you know, we got to update for what we're doing now and where we're going. And, you know, so I think, you know, I would, you know, I'll be honest, part of my wish, my desire to serve, though, does also is concerned about that. I want to protect public schools. And I know that in our country, just broadly, you know, schools have become this place that folks may target or wish to serve, but maybe not necessarily, as I see it, in the interest of education, but of other means. And you know, as I said, the grandchild of educators and a person that has benefited from the relationships with school teachers I've had, you know, I feel like I have an obligation to take, you know, to serve and have it focus again on what schools are all about, which is teaching our kids.
I've been speaking with Justice Raji, who is a candidate for this Beaverton School Board. Justice, I wish you all the best.
Awesome. Thank you, Moses. I appreciate you.
Well, that was our interview with Justice Raji, and I really appreciated the time that he gave me to talk about his motivation, what he wants to see happen with the Beaverton School District. Now, and last, the final guest that I have for the show tonight is a candidate running for school board in the Malala River School Board District. Malala River School District. Folks might know Malala's in Clackamas County. But there's also many things about it, though, that are kind of a microcosm of the other overall challenges of running for school board in the current environment. So I believe that my production... I'd like to introduce... Jennifer, are you available? Are you there?
I am.
Wonderful. Hey. So please let me introduce you, Jennifer Walton Satter.
Just Satter. It's only Walton Satter on Facebook. Sorry.
Okay, Jennifer Satter, S-A-T-T-E-R, candidate for the Malala River School Board. Thank you very much for being here.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Well, you know, I always start my interviews with candidates and electeds the same way, because it just intrigues me very much to know, to understand what it was that motivated you to run for political office, especially a school board position.
Well, I started in about 2010. There was a very popular band and choir program through our middle school, and it was on the district's chopping block in their budget. And I started becoming active in the parent-led effort to keep the programs. And then I just stayed active afterwards. And then I got on the budget committee for the school district, and I ran in 2012, but I lost. Mm-hmm. And then I ran again in 2017, and I won. And I was served on the school board from 2017 till 2021. I ran again in 2021, and I lost by 117 votes.
Ouch.
Yeah, so I'm running again.
Right there, an example of the old adage that every vote counts. Isn't that the truth?
Definitely. It was really close.
So, but you decided, but after losing that race in 2021, you've decided to put your hat back into the ring for this race, for this year. Is
that yeah. Right? I promised one of our former school board members who passed away, obviously before he passed away, that I was going to run against my opponent.
You know, we had a little bit of a discussion about this, and this kind of leads to the overall challenge right now with school boards is the priorities of school boards being changed. Is that a good fair? Is that a neutral way of saying it, or an objective way of saying what's happening here?
Yes, it's definitely been a priority for the extreme right to politicize school boards and to their own objectives.
Mm-hmm. How's that? What? Give me an example of what you're facing when you're out there.
Well, so my opponent is very ingrained in the Clackamas County Republican Party, which I know lots of people that are wonderful people who are involved in the Clackamas County Republicans. Mm-hmm. But she's pretty extreme in her views. Before COVID, a couple months before COVID, there was an issue with this Parents' Rights in Education group that was brought to the board a proclamation, and it didn't really have anything to do with anything going on in our district. It was completely a political move, and it caused massive upheaval in our district for months, and it caused a lot of distrust with our teachers and anger and a lot of hurt with our LGBTQ plus students and their families. We had parents, some of their parents come to school board meetings and speak up because the students I know, because they're friends with my son or I'm friends with their parents, their families are very involved in their lives. It's not, you know, their idea of protecting families is hurting families that they don't agree with. So there was, the things that we were doing that were to build up those parents' rights and help parents out were completely derailed at the time. So the board pushing the district for better communication with parents, for better communication from coaches to parents in the athletic program. And there were a lot of issues that we were working on that were set aside.
To work on those issues that they thought were priorities, they felt were priorities.
Yeah, but they weren't priorities. And you see that a lot going along around across the country, and it's about politics that doesn't have anything to do with what's going on in our schools on a day-to-day basis and supporting our students and supporting our families and our community. And that's what the focus needs to be on. It's, you know, there's nothing the school board can do about what's going on at the state level or the national level. Our job is to focus on what's going on with our families and our students and support them.
Mm-hmm. Now, how has it gone for you out on the campaign trail, given that environment?
Well, I have a different kind of beef going on with the mayor. It's he has convinced a couple of his followers, which he calls the mayor's mafia, which is very inappropriate considering he's being investigated for gun crimes. So his Mirrors Mafia has been spreading around that I am Antifa. And so when I'm driving around in the big jack-up truck, it's comical. But not that I'm definitely not for fascism. But I suppose we're all Antifa in a way. I know my grandpa was when he was served in World War II.
Let me ask you this real quick, just because what you're talking about is pretty striking, and I think there's a lack of familiarity with it, at least in the metro area here, because of the predominance of the we just don't see it as much, you know. One could say that our city council has actually gotten under the radar a little bit more conservative, but you don't see with that; it's not as visible.
Oh yeah, no, Portland's a bad word in Malala.
Malala. Now, Malala. Just for everybody to know, Malala is in Outer Clackamas County. It's about 40 miles away from 20 miles away from Canby.
Yeah, yeah, 20 miles. It's not a very long drive to Canby.
Right. You know, one thing that I've been struck with, and I remember we had a conversation a little bit earlier too, beforehand, about the commonality of all three of the candidates that I've spoken with tonight, and that is their desire to get to focus on the education of the youth, or of the students, and to not get of everyone, not just and that seems to. How do you feel your message of productivity is going over with voters?
It's a mix, you know. A very diverse group of friends living in Malala. I have some that are extremely liberal and some that are extremely conservative. Some are still friends with the mayor. Mm-hmm. And then I feel like most people in the community as a whole are pretty moderate. You know, and most people just want to go to work and take care of their families and maybe go to soccer and live their lives in peace, and they don't want to be involved in a bunch of drama.
Right.
And I think that they're underrepresented in the public communication because they don't participate in it a lot.
Yeah.
And so it's kind of hard here, though, because the vocal minority of these the people on the extreme right are pretty loud voices here.
Mm-hmm.
It's just as they see the vocal minority on the left as, you know, extreme in Portland, when there's a whole range of people that live in Portland. But the same is true here, but on the opposite end of the spectrum.
Hmm. Now, what's ironic too is that, you know, we all fundamentally want the best for our children. It's just that they're not, at least in my observation, they're being fed information that is just, that inflames the issues, that does not, they're addressing the wrong issues. Maybe this is, I'm just my humble opinion here. I mean, why are we trying to, give us an example of some of the things that they've been doing. They're not trying to ban books, are they? They're not trying to.
Not yet. Canby started, though.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. I haven't heard anything yet in Malala. It's been pretty low key. They did push out a vaccine clinic that was at the high school, but luckily the local United Methodist Church held it there.
I know that there has certainly been a threat of anti-trans and the drag queen issue and all of that. Is that hasn't come up in this issue, in this election, has it?
No, it hasn't come up yet, but it's definitely an issue. I mean, before COVID, it's very striking, the difference at the school level, because my son went through high school through COVID, before COVID and after COVID, right?
Mm-hmm.
And he's 19 now, but before COVID, the kids were fine. The kids were fine. There wasn't a lot of, you know, problems for the students on a day-to-day level with using the bathroom for for the gender that I identified with, you know, the other students. But after kids spent a year and a half home with their parents, that there was definitely a change in the culture within the schools where those transgender kids faced a lot more discrimination from the other students. And so, and I was really proud of how the students were able just to accept one another before COVID. And it's, you know, it's distressing that that's changed because, you know, before COVID, it was only just the adults mess everything up. But, as you know, but everybody, I feel like at the district level, the teachers and administration and staff tried to protect or, you know, keep things at the school level where it wasn't affecting the kids, whatever the grown-up drama was.
Right. Right. And, you know, and imagine the challenge, too, is, you know, in a smaller school district, you know, there is a certain level of skepticism and deniability that there was actually an issue and all the misinformation that threw out there. I imagine, just like it is politically, I imagine the pandemic could create alternatives for explanations that all over the place.
Yeah, it's been surreal. I think most of the world's been kind of surreal since COVID, where people spend a lot of time getting bad information and watching things on YouTube, which anybody can make a YouTube video and accept it as facts. It's just like the Antifa thing. You know, like someone says it. One guy says he swore he heard me say it at the bar, and I'm like, there, that did not happen. I'm like, oh, I know that did not happen. I saw you 2 days ago at a garage sale next door, at my next door neighbor's house, and you didn't accuse me of any of this stuff, but now you're on Facebook saying this. I've known you for 20 years.
You know, what's kind of interesting about this and is that there, part of the challenge of running for an elected office in a smaller town or a county like that is because you're in a smaller town or a county like that, you know, there's certainly different issues and there's certainly a different environment. You know, I used to live in a very small town in Wyoming, and yeah, you know everyone. And if somebody starts saying things that are incorrect, it's, you're close. Yeah, you hear about it.
Yeah. Well, and before COVID, I'm an accountant, and I was working downtown Portland, and I didn't spend much time in town, and so I feel like I didn't hear stuff as much. And before Facebook, I didn't know any gossip. I just would go, you know, downtown Portland to work and come back to Moala, take my kids to Cub Scouts and such, and I didn't hear any of the gossip. And Facebook kind of opened my eyes to that.
Oh my goodness, yeah. Next, also one of the Nextdoor app is always has been a big one for doing that sort of thing.
You know, I've heard that. I haven't spent much time on it.
Okay, that's probably for the best. You know, it's interesting. I have a lot. Let me circle this back around to public service. Given the environment, given the priorities, why is it important to be a public service right now, knowing all what you're facing in this environment?
Well, I mean, it's always been important to me. I've served on school board. I served on city council. I've been serving on planning commission since 2018. The community is important to me. The kids are important to me. And, you know, for running against my opponent, it's important to me because I want to get that focus back on the kids. And the real issues that the district faces on a day-to-day basis. Mm-hmm. You know, we have the fentanyl crisis. You know, we already had an issue with drug use in our youth, and now with that, it's a deadly crisis now. Mm-hmm. And that's a big issue. We have a bond coming up, and she's fine for the bond. It does a good job advocating for the bond. But there's, you know, sorry, funding for athletics. You know, there's still issues in athletics that need to be addressed. There's the employee culture issues that need to be addressed so we can attract and retain really great quality teachers. I mean, we have some great quality teachers, and, you know, we need to keep the ones we have. We can't pay as much as other districts. Some districts, like, Wilsonville, some districts, I think Tualatin, or they have levies that help pay their teacher salaries, and we can't compete with that in salary-wise. We need to compete with it with having a great culture for employees to want to work for us.
Amen.
And our kids.
Well, I wish you all the best in your upcoming election, and I'm appreciative, Jennifer, that you took some time to talk with me and to enlighten my audience about the unique challenges of running for school board in this environment right now. All the best to you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Appreciate your time. All right, folks, it's 7:52. I want to move on. We have some announcements that Sherry wants to make. And I want to thank you very much. And if you want to get a hold of any of the candidates, look in your voter pamphlet. But for Danny, and we'll also be posting the show on our KBOO website. We'll have those links there, too, to all of the folks. So, Sherry, I'll pass it off to you, and thank you all very much.
Great, great show. Thank you. Thank you, Moses. Moses is fabulous. We adore him. You know, we came from public access TV, and this environment in this community, I feel a lot more comfortable. It's more proactive, and I just want to thank KBOO for offering this space to the community for us to be able to engage in these conversations. I want to thank Danny Cage, Jennifer, and I missed...
Justice Raji.
And Justice Raji for wonderful interviews. Thank you for helping us out and listening to us tonight. I do want to tell you that Mount Hood Jazz Festival is happening on May 5th through the 7th. This sounds like a really exciting gig over at the campus. So you'll go to mhcc.edu/jazz festival. It's at the Mount Hood Community College, and it sounds super fun. They have some pretty big acts going on. I'm not going to slaughter anybody's names. If you want to volunteer for KBOO, please email volunteer@kboo.org, and our volunteer coordinator will connect with you. Full disclosure, I am a board member here at KBOO, so a lot of times when I'm on, I'm going to be talking about KBOO. We can always use donations. Just go to the website and click on that donation button, and anything you can do to help out the station, keeping you informed with music, news, public affairs, it will be amazing to have you as part of our community. You can be a member, a board member, a volunteer, or just listen. And I am going to be quiet now as you listen to Lovely Day by Bill Withers. Here in a minute. Where'd it go?
When I wake up in the morning, love, and the sunlight hurts my eyes, and something without warning, love, bears heavy on my mind, then I look at you, and the world's all right with me. Just one look at you, and I know it's gonna be a lovely day. Lovely day, lovely day, lovely day, lovely day. impossible to fail. When someone else instead of me always seems to know the way, then I look at you and the world's all right with me. Just one look at you and I know it's gonna be a lovely day. Instead of me, always seems to know the way. Then I look at you, and the world's all right with me. I just one look at you, and I know it's gonna be.
You're listening to KBOO Portland 90.7 FM, also heard at translator K220HR Hood River at 91.9 FM and translator K282BH in Philomath at 104.3 FM. And we're streaming at the top of our lungs.
Sound was used for centuries as a method of torture.
Thanks for tuning in.
Place someone's head inside of a bell and ring it.
Tune in to KBOO every other Tuesday at 3 a.m. for the Vinyl Pajama Party with your erstwhile host, Brian.
And eventually,
you never know what you will find on your radio/interwebs during